Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune is here to answer your parenting dilemmas. Hello, Joanna.
Hello, Fiona. How are
just
you?
Just back from holidays and now here
just
to solve
back straight into it.
Everyone's yeah. issues.
Recharged, ready yeah. to go.
Stunning. Okay, my six-year-old son is very mean. My son is the youngest of four much older children, from 23 down to 16. One girl, three boys. Two of the older children don't live at home. One lives abroad and the other is in college. I'm a full-time stay-at-home mother and my husband works a very busy and demanding job, so he is only home at the weekend. My son is a loving, caring, kind, very empathetic, highly in tune with his and others' emotions. He requires a lot of attention and love on a continuous basis. He has never been able to play by himself. He loves to be active and he loves to help me with whatever I do. I'm exhausted, physically and emotionally. I absolutely adore my little boy and he's a very special child. He has a high intelligence, but his demanding nature is very demanding on me and my husband. He's a wonderful relationship with my husband. My husband is very patient and very loving and caters, in brackets, a little too much to his every need. His mean streak has taken on a whole new dimension this summer. He calls us names, has started saying small lies, says stuff like, "Do you really think you're smart? You're not. I am. You're so stupid." He told his dad, "I said my ex-boyfriend was much better looking than his father," in brackets, not true. He says he hopes we break up. Our house is so stupid. Our cars are the worst. His life is the worst. You should put cream on your face so nobody can see your lines and cracks. There is so much more, but I just can't think of all the stuff he says. I reply by saying, "That's not very nice. Nobody talks to you like that," or "That hurts my feelings." I've seen signs of this mean behaviour with his friends in social situations from time to time. What can I do to help my son? The meanness is not his true nature and that makes it hard for me to understand him at the moment. How can I handle this situation before this trait becomes him?
Oh, it's a lot in there, isn't it? And there's a few layers to it. First of all, you have this little boy who is by far the youngest sibling. So is growing up in a family of much more adult minds all around him. And, you know, you can imagine having siblings that are that much older than you also might feel like you've quite a few parents around, not just your actual parents. There's also that there's a little bit, though, that's coming up for me about this high intelligence that's mentioned here. And it seems to be something he's taunting the parent about. You think you're smart, but I'm smart. So intelligence is something that's really in the mix. A couple of things, though, and just to, he's six. Meanness in children can actually be a normal part of development. It's not something any parent relishes or goes, "Oh, there's my child going through their mean phase." You know, it's something that we don't like to think about, but actually it can be a normal phase of development whereby kids are testing social boundaries. They haven't yet got the emotional language to really express things or communicate clearly that kind of myriad of feelings and stuff going on. So it can come out in that way. It's often, now, when we think about it developmentally, it's often underpinned, and this is true for a lot of adults, if we're honest, by hunger, thirst, tiredness, feeling unwell, much more than it is by malice. Meanness is not bullying. Those are different things when we're talking about it in that range of mild to moderate. Most kids go through some meanness. Mm. It's often underpinned that way. With this little boy, though, and because of how bright he's described, and, you know, he may have an actual very high IQ intelligence, but we would just think about things like, could you be looking at what's called asynchronous development? And really what that means, though, is that the brain can process complex or abstract ideas or information far beyond the chronological age of the child, but their social emotional development is either where it should be for their age or a little behind their peers. So what you get is high intelligence masking emotional deficits.
Okay.
So he's not able to, when this parent is saying, you know, "That's not very nice and no one talks to you like that," he's not really able to project into the perspective of the other and feel that person's feelings. He can intellectualize them, but he's not emoting them.
Okay.
Nor would we expect a six-year-old to do that.
Yeah.
I hasten to add, by the way, but he's, because cognitively he's ahead, emotionally he's not.
Okay.
So what you then get is this gap between how he's thinking and how he's feeling. And in that gap, you tend to get a lot of meanness can come. It can come out as arrogance. It can come condescension, meanness, all in that kind of box. but it's really masking what might be more of a social anxiety.
Okay.
And just to be very mindful of that with this little guy, I think is important.
Yeah. What about the flagging of the social situations with the other friends? Does it just so happen to be that they've unfortunately all synced up and they're all in a mean phase together, or is it something that they kind of should be aware of?
Yeah, no, absolutely be aware of it, because if he's taking these behaviours and he's playing them out with children, they're also coming into an age now where children begin to make selections about friends. I don't want to be your friend. I will be your friend. You're my best friend. You're not my friend. They, you know, it's not so we're all friends together. So actually this is something to be aware of. And I do think that the summer, the fact that this has really bubbled up in the summer, again, for a bright kid, stimulation needs of highly intelligent children are actually quite high, and he's not in school and he doesn't have the structure of whatever activities or whatever keeps him stimulated during the school year. So impatience and boredom can cause bright children to snap and become mean. So look at the stimulation and activity. And I don't say this to add on to this parent who already sounds exhausted, but also exhausted because you're largely the parent and playmate of this child. You're saying he's never been able to play by himself. You know, he's at an age where we certainly would expect to be seeing some solo play going on. And particularly at his age, you know, what we're going to call small world play, where they have the little characters talk to each other, the little figures or cars or dinosaurs, whatever it is. And that's really imaginative play, but it's also the stage of play where children are able to work out social anxieties, where they're able to work out social scenarios, where they do reciprocity and turn taking. You see aggression, you see repair, you see all of that worked out. Empathy, critical thinking, all of that is laid down in that type of play. So without that rich imaginative play, he may actually be lacking the kind of social skills that now you're seeing in this apparent meanness is actually that he needs a bit of support with his social emotional development.
Yeah.
So I would go back to play. Just play, play, play. And I'm thinking of that middle stage of play. A lot of go back to the sensory, messy, tactile, set him up, even if it's with dress it up as science experiments for him. But really, he can make oobleck, or he can make Play-Dohs, or he can make potions, or just it's all sensory play. But he can think he's doing a science experiment and that'll feel very intelligent for him. And that will be great. Get out anything like, you know, the little story cubes or storytelling dice. You can pick them up in lots of different places. They're dice that have images on each side. You shake them, you roll them out, you make up a story based on what's there. That's good for turn taking. It's also good for just creative thinking and imagination, all of that stuff. I'd have him play, and I would hold very, like she's doing, but holding firm, gentle but firm boundaries. It is not okay to talk to people like that. And your facial expression, your emotional tone of voice should all match the seriousness of what you're trying to convey. Let's have a do-over. So rather than just saying, don't talk like that, have him practice how he should talk.
Give them another opportunity.
Exactly. Let's fix it now.
Yep.
Say this, I'll say that. Let's do this. Role play it. I'll be you, you be me, you be me, and swap it over so that he is practicing out how he should talk to others, because he's still learning. He's only six.
Yeah.
He's a really young child.
Yeah. Now, we have no understanding as to how much television this child is consuming. I will say we have a text who is, they're blaming Peppa Pig. They said Peppa Pig is the reason why kids are mean, because Peppa herself is very mean and makes very mean remarks.
I'm not a Peppa Pig fan. And Peppa is cheeky and mean and comes out with a few things that you'd never allow your kids to say. So there, but it's, you know, some of this is a bit deeper than Peppa and a bit bigger than Peppa. But, you know, there is nothing in here about TV. This sounds like a kid actually whose parent is doing a lot of the heavy lifting of trying to entertain him and keep him active and engaged. I think you want to challenge and stimulate him, but at the same time, work on teaching that human connection is driven by feelings, not logic. He, like, I know this person saying he's very empathetic, he's highly in tune with others' feelings. You can intellectualize other people's feelings. I intellectually understand how you're feeling, but I'm not feeling that in me, because that would be about perspective taking and empathy. So bring that into the play. He's at an age where everything he's going to learn about social skills and emotional expression is going to come through experiential, creative, imaginative play. I would put all of my efforts and resources into that.
Okay, solidarity with that parent. My toddler, who's 2.5, has been struggling hugely with the arrival of his baby brother, who's now 6 weeks old. He seems to really love the baby, but obviously doesn't love everything that goes along with having a newborn in the house. His mood is much more up and down. He gets sad and angry far more often and lashes out at myself and my husband regularly. He has also regressed in some aspects of his development. He seems particularly upset with me, his mother. The first few nights after the baby and I came home, he had nightmares and was crying out for mama in his sleep. The nightmares passed, but it seems like he's been somewhat traumatised by the whole thing. Me being away for several nights and then coming home and things being very different. We had a wonderful relationship for the last 2.5 years, and it is almost like he is grieving that. I prepared him as best I could for the arrival of the baby, and even now I still give him plenty of attention. I play with him, I often put him to bed at night, I include him in tasks and jobs, some to do with the baby, some not, but nothing seems enough. I suppose I'm looking for reassurance that this is normal and he will be okay. Is there anything I should or shouldn't be doing at this point? He will be starting preschool in September.
Oh, there's a lot of change going on for this little guy, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, everything in that opening piece there about his behaviour, this baby sibling is only 6 weeks old. It's still very now, recent, raw and going, oh my God, is this baby staying here? Mm. Like, are they going to be here forever? It all makes total sense. It's really normal. It is to be expected. The crying out for mama in his sleep, it's very frightening for children when their parents disappear. And then so delighted when you come back, but you come back with this baby that's taking up your time. So he's trying to work out, well, hang on a second, what's happened? I don't want to share you for 2.5 years. I haven't had to share you. I've had you. You're talking about this special relationship, but really he's had you all to himself. He needs time with this. Now, timing isn't great with the old preschool start in September on top of this, because that's another transition for him in quick succession to this. So everything you're doing as a parent to help him adjust to the baby, keep doing it. Okay, just be patient, trust the process, it will happen. Giving him little bits of responsibility, but not much. You know, like, you know, you're dead right that some of the tasks should be with the baby, some of them should not. You know, time with you, play time when the baby's sleeping, or if a visitor comes, making sure the visitor greets him first and, you know, and then the baby, and can hold the baby and you give your attention to him. It's all going to click in for him, but it will take time. And I would certainly give him more than 6 weeks. I'd be giving him at least another 6 to 8 weeks on top of that. But he's starting school. It's another big change in very quick succession. Watch all the big kid chat around him. You're a big boy now. Oh, you're off to school. Oh, you're the big brother. Watch how much of that. That's quite stressful for a kid who's like, well, I didn't ask to be the big kid. I quite like being the little kid, actually. I'm not ready for that. So watch that. Catch others in it. Minimize it. Walk by his new preschool a couple of times. Point it out positively, excitedly. Oh, look, there's your new school. Oh, my goodness, you're going to have so much fun. You're going to play. You're going to learn. You're going to have friends. And then we're going to meet up afterwards, whatever you're going to do, picking him up, because this parent may well be on leave. You know, we're going to get a juice or a water on the way home and we can chat about your day, that you're making it a celebration. I would give him lots of time. And I think the fact that preschool is starting for now, I'd actually give him a little bit more time than typical adjustment.
Yeah.
I'd be working more towards, let him see how he is by Halloween midterm, and just, that's a lot in his little world.
Yeah. Patience and positive reinforcement.
It is, but you're on the right track and doing the right things. Yeah. Just keep doing it.
Yeah. My 10-year-old daughter walked in on me and her dad when we were having sex. It was late and we assumed she was still asleep, so we weren't being risky. It was all a bit embarrassing and we are not sure how much she saw or how long she was there when we spotted her. In the moment, we were both very flustered and shouted for her to go back to her room. Eventually, when I followed her in, I was too embarrassed to say much, and she just said she'd come into our room because she wanted a drink. She went back to sleep and that was it. Now I wonder if I should talk to her again about it. She's the eldest and still quite innocent. And though we have had the birds and bees conversation, we have not spoken much more about this. Can she be negatively affected by what she saw? And should I bring it up with her again? I am mortified.
I think that last three words is the essence of this letter.
Yeah.
Parental mortification, isn't it?
Palpable.
And lots of people have been in this situation. You have to stay calm and matter of fact about it, okay? It's happened.
Yeah.
You can't unhappen it. But you also can't jump over it and short circuit the conversation because it's uncomfortable. She's absolutely not going to bring up with you, hey, I'd love to chat more about this, because she's 10. You've had some kind of a conversation with her about the facts of life, about sex, about growing up, about her body. But, you know, lots of the conversations we have with our children when this phrase birds and bees, could mean anything.
Yeah.
Like you could have been talking about changes to her own body, but not actually about sex. And so it is time to revisit and grow that conversation up. Now, she is 10 years old. We presume she has a level of knowledge and you're, as I said, expanding and growing it up. I think get her into the car for a drive, okay, for both your sake, okay, not just the child. Bring it up by saying, I think we all got a fright when you walked into our room the other night. I know we yelled at you to get out because that might be the bit that shocked her most.
Yeah.
Rather than what she saw.
Yeah.
You know, so we yelled at you to get out. You're not in trouble. You would never be in trouble for coming in. We're not cross with you. But do you have any questions about what you saw? Because I think you saw your dad and I having sex.
Okay. But then I suppose it opens a portal of questions.
It does, that you have to be prepared to answer.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can answer them without, you know, this is something that grown-ups do. And it's, you know, she may, you see, again, it depends on how you've previously had the conversation. Because if she's like, are you trying to make a baby? Then you have to clarify, well, that's one way, that reason that people have sex. But sometimes people have sex because it feels good for them to do so. And it's a way that they celebrate their relationship. And it's for adults. And that's really what you're emphasizing. It's for adults. We weren't doing anything wrong. You didn't do anything wrong. But we all got a fright when you walked in. And as parents, then you might be thinking, okay, we may need to lock the door in those moments or certainly close the door over so you've got more of a warning when somebody's going to walk into your room. But that's all in retrospect and what you're going to do planning forward. I would also say to her, though, look, you might be embarrassed to talk about this. Your dad and I, or if it's dad having the conversation, your mom and I, we were embarrassed. But we can still talk about embarrassing things.
Mm.
So it's okay if I'm getting a bit embarrassed right now and you are, we're still going to talk about it. It's really about staying calm through that embarrassment as best you can.
Yeah. And as you said, what's been done has been done. Yeah.
Like there isn't a script for this. This is the thing that as parents, we like to think, well, I'll never have to have that conversation because it's never going to happen to me. And it does. It happens all the time.
Sometimes it does.
It does.
Sometimes it does. You were talking earlier about children getting into the phase of picking friends and the choices of friends and stuff like that. So I think this would be a good one to move on to. My 12-year-old daughter is due to start secondary school at the end of August. During her time in primary school, she was lucky to have made many friends. Some of the girls from my daughter's friend group will be going to the same secondary school as her. However, before primary school ended, I decided to buy my daughter her first phone. After joining social media, she soon realised she was being excluded from various hangouts with her friends. She has spent her summer looking at photos of her friends meeting up without her. My daughter is now anxious more than ever about starting secondary school. How do I help my daughter feel less nervous as she enters a new school where the only girls she knows have been excluding her?
It's FOMO, isn't it? The curse of FOMO. And I don't say that lightly because that's a real thing, the fear of missing out. And it can be really consuming. And again, as adults, a lot of us can relate to that, you know, but it's really about validating her feelings. Of course you feel excluded and that's really difficult. And that's a horrible feeling to have. And then you really want to reduce her access to social media apps. If she's spending a lot of time, like here, she spent her summer looking at photos of her friend. No.
Yeah.
Like absolutely reduce her access to social media apps. Encourage her to put her phone down. You know, really encourage her to nurture her own interests, her own connections. And if it is with these girls, because they're all going to secondary school together, that she proactively reach out and say, hey, do you guys want to come over and hang out? We can get pizza. You can hang out in my house or can, you know, make an arrangement to go somewhere together so that she's not just saying, well, I'm waiting to be invited in. Because that would presume there's already a hierarchy of somebody's in charge of who can hang out or not, rather than saying, hi, I'd love to hang out.
Yeah,
what are you guys up to?
Reinforce that.
Exactly. And so that she is kind of proactively including herself. I'd also, though, use this as a good opportunity to remind her that social media and what we see on it is just a glimpse into somebody's day or somebody's experience. And it's always the highlights. People always post the goofy photo, but not the row they had before the photo or the fact that they all just sat staring into their phones and not talking to each other afterwards. Nobody's videoing that. So you can see these photos or quick, short, few second video clips and think, they're having an amazing time, but it's only part of the story. So it's a good opportunity to talk to her about some media literacy, some social media boundaries. But I would be trying to get her away from staring at people doing things she's not doing and encourage her to think about, well, what would you like to do?
Yeah.
And who would you like to be doing it with? I get as well, like some children are going to transition into secondary school, a huge transition in and of itself. And it can be reassuring they'll know some people there. but it's also an opportunity to make new friends and to align with kids who are more like her, have more in common with her at her developmental stage. Because just because they were in primary school together, what can happen very quickly is some of them over the summer, as they're getting ready to go in, become very pseudo mature, and they think they're already 16 and they're really, oh yeah, whatevs, you know, I'm well able. And others are going in like terrified little bunnies in headlights, you know, that they don't know what's going on. There's nothing wrong with either of those, but it may be that your daughter is going to go in and she's going to find new connections that really do spark joy, and she's naturally part of a new group. So encourage her to get involved in the school community, sports or drama or whatever little activities the school are offering, and find that out in advance. And just making sure that you're there to emotionally support her for the first couple of weeks of that transition.
Yeah.
But don't presume that because these friends are hanging out together that she's not welcome. I would initiate a contact there.
Yeah, it seems to be a big thing among this age bracket. Like, we had a text in that says they're experiencing something similar with their daughter, and they're pointing it to this constant live location sharing.
Absolutely.
That is a big thing on 100% a lot of the apps that the kids are using. Like, that's so, when you have that visual of, or you can see, Snapchat is one where it's like you can see them all in the physical place. Like, that is tough. It's such a, I don't know why that became such a thing, and I wish it wasn't. I can empathize with kids then looking at the maps
going
mad. I agree,
and I'd presume that's a part of what's going on here.
Yeah.
And that's why when I'm saying reduce her time on that app, that is not in her best interests.
No.
Because that's incredibly difficult and stressful.
Yeah.
But it also can breed this level of hypervigilance where you're constantly checking, are they still there? Are they gone? Where are they now? What are they doing?
Mm.
And so it makes it a bigger deal in your head than it is for those who are doing it.
Yeah. Can we put the genie back in the bottle when it comes to phones, or is it?
I mean, I'm on the record as saying before, I think transitioning from primary to secondary school is a massive jump for so many kids. Introducing phones at this time, you'd want to go in with your eyes wide open and make sure that you are overseeing and supporting and facilitating. So the phone is already given to her. She has access to social media. It's parental role and responsibility to make sure that she knows that she does, just because she has it, she can turn it off.
Yeah.
That if it's not making her feel good about herself, the answer isn't to keep, you know, like when you have a bruise and you know it hurts, but you keep touching it to make sure it still hurts.
Yeah.
That compulsion to repeat is there. So it's really empowering her to say, do you know what? This is not making you happy.
Yeah.
Put it away. And that she's only 12. Make that decision with and for her, and empower her to know, look, I'm just going to park that. I don't want to keep seeing what people are doing, but I'm going to make a plan for what I'm going to do and what sparks joy for me, so that I don't lose this summer watching other people rather than actively participating myself in whatever that's going to look like. It's very difficult. I think if anyone's listening and they haven't given the phone and they're thinking they're going to give it as a starting school thing, I would encourage you to wait till after Christmas.
Yeah.
Give them the first term to simply settle into school, and that's enough of an adjustment to deal with, and then revisit it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Joanna Fortune, thank you so much.
Thanks
for all of that.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.